We continue to read from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the 10th canto, chapter 6, entitled The Killing of the Demon Putana, text number 33. Kale varam parashubhish, chitva tate vrajokasa, dure ksipta vayavaso, nyadahan kasta vistitam, kale varam parashubhis, chitva tate vrajokasa, dure ksipta vayavaso, nyadahan kasta vistitam. There's something that went wrong there. It's of the next verse. Somehow or other, the person who wrote jumped to the next verse and wrote the last verse of word of the next verse. It's actually vestitam. Some cross-linking. And then cross-linked files, that's right. Okay, I'll slowly start with the first line. Kale varam parashubhis, chitva tate vrajokasa, dure ksipta vayavaso, nyadahan kasta vistitam. Kalevaram, the gigantic body of Putana. Parashubhi, with the aid of axes. Chitva, after cutting to pieces. Ta, that body. Te, all those. Vrajokasha, inhabitants of Vraja. Dure, far, far away. Ksipta, after throwing. Abhayavasaha, different parts of the body, piece by piece. Nyadahan, burnt to ashes. Kustavistita, covered by wood. Translation. The inhabitants of Raja cut the gigantic body of Putana into pieces with the help of axes. Then they threw the pieces far away, covered them with wood, and burned them to ashes. Purport. It is the practice that after a snake has been killed, its body is cut into various pieces for fear that it may come to life again simply by interacting with air. Merely killing a serpent is not sufficient. After it is killed, it must be cut to pieces and burned, and then the danger will be over. Putana resembled a great serpent, and therefore the cowherd men took the same precautions by burning her body to ashes. Om Agyanati Marandasya Ginnana Salakya Chaksuramitam Yena Tasmai Si Guruve Namah Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Darati Swapadantikam Vandeham Si Guru Si Yutapada Kamalam Si Gurun Vaisnavam Sya Si Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vidamtam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Si Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Si Visakanvitam Sya He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesa Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radevinavaneshwari Vishabhanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatrubhyacha Sakripa Sanumevacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. It is said that when the living entity comes to the material world for the first time, that first he takes birth in the body of Brahma. Of course, we must understand there are unlimited Brahmas, so therefore it is not at all bewildering, and the question doesn't arise, but Lord Brahma is a pure devotee, so how is it possible that he would gradually, that he after his birth would go down into the material energy? Rather, Lord Brahma as a pure devotee should return to the spiritual sky. Yes, that is true, but then there are so many manifestations of Brahma all throughout the Brahmanda. Brahmanda sometimes refers to the material universe, and other times Brahmanda refers to the entire Mahatattva, to the entire cluster of all the material universes that are just lying there on the ocean of of karana, or of causes, the causal ocean where the Supreme Lord is resting in Yoga Nidra. So, when the living entity descends into the material world, he certainly is doing so because of false ego. And false ego means he has developed the desire to enjoy for himself. That desire is immediately causing so much distress. All throughout the Vedic literature, this point is raised, that as soon as one tries to enjoy the material energy, then one is suffering like anything. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna was on the battlefield, he just wanted to see in between the two armies how all those family members who were so eager to fight were standing there in different military arrays. And he said to Krishna, take me in between the two armies, and Krishna did as the chariot driver and took him right in front of Dronacharya and Bhishma, so he could just have a good look. And immediately all his family attachment came out. And at that point, Arjuna lost all interest to fight, and he said, I don't see anything auspicious in this endeavor. There is no auspiciousness in this endeavor at all. But that was incorrect, because actually all the kshatriyas that were assembled there were duly fighting according to religious principles. So just by the codes of kshatriya conduct, they were those who would fight the battle and win, they would get the benefit of the kingdom, and the other ones who would be killed, it said they would even get the benediction that they would be able to enter into the sun planet, a much better situation than where we're now. So no one was a loser. So the argument that I don't see any benefit in this was incorrect, was false. Actually, what Arjuna meant to say, I don't see anything auspicious for me in this situation. Because all the others who were involved, it was very auspicious. And it was even more auspicious than just Kshatriya codes, because Krishna was present also. So nobody missed out, everyone got the mercy. But for Arjuna, it didn't look auspicious for himself. So this selfishness is the tendency of the conditioned soul, and is what ensnares him deeper and deeper into matter. So gradually, the living entity that initially comes in the form of Lord Brahma, a Brahma that is not a pure devotee, but a Brahma somewhere in a universe that is highly elevated and extremely pure, but has some tendency to lord it over the material energy and some desire to enjoy the fruits of his labor, such a Brahma will gradually go down to lower forms of the of existence within the material world. Why is that so? It is because as soon as one has the tendency to control and enjoy the material nature, that one cannot be satisfied. Even when he is in the position of Brahma, in the position of unlimited opulence, he cannot be satisfied. Therefore, when the living entity in the position of Brahma is not fully satisfied, his desires increase because they are not being satisfied. It is just like your hunger. When you are not eating for a while, then you're starving, right? Otherwise, you're hungry at regular times, but if you skip a meal, then you're starving. And then the next one, you'll start no longer eating, but devouring, right? So in that way, the eagerness increases. The desire increases. So in the same way, the desire for enjoyment, which was not being fulfilled in the first birth, builds up and leads to a next one, where there's more endeavor for facility. So with that increased desire, one goes deeper into the material energy and becomes more covered. So one takes his birth in a lower form, somewhat lower, still very exalted from our perspective, maybe in the form of various demigods, and gradually, still, in spite of all the opulences that the demigods are having, except especially the principal demigods who are surrounded by all kinds of personalities who are just glorifying them, serving them, praising them every step of the way. In the heavenly gardens, every step you do, there is someone who's singing your glories. You are so wonderful. Your looks are fantastic. Everything you do, you are the blessing for all of us. Your presence is enlightening us any moment. Oh, how wonderful that you are here. It is, you are the light of our life, and all kinds of poets are surrounding you. So after a while, you get used to it and start thinking, yes, of course, they understand, right? Intelligent, these people. they have recognized my qualifications. Ah, just see. So a little attached you get to the idea. Yes, I am special. It is true. Everyone can see it. And actually, although I don't give it much attention, but if I look at my reflection in this beautiful lake, then it is extremely beautiful, I must say. I must say. It is very beautiful, actually. I am wonderful. It is true. And gradually you become convinced. After all, everybody thinks so, so it must be true. You can convince yourself. And you begin to enjoy it for a while. And you're enjoying, but never to your full satisfaction. That is not possible in the material world. It is certainly possible to enjoy. No one will deny that. And everyone has some experience, but not to your full satisfaction. Therefore, something remains dissatisfied. And it's that same feeling of dissatisfaction which is carried forward birth after birth. And the frustration is just increasing. And gradually, the emotion that begins to develop becomes uglier and uglier. And one goes down again and again. Until one comes to lower species, such as human beings. When one finally has descended to the species of human being, so much ugliness begins to manifest. Whereas the demigods are predominantly in the mode of goodness, and although at times they may have some lower emotions, such as envy, etc., now in the human form of life, it is pretty much there, somewhere all the time. Right? Now in the human form of life, our consciousness can be compared to a cooking stove with different pots on it. And there's the pot with envy, the pot with lust, the pot with greed, the pot with anger. And all these are on different flames. And sometimes one is turned up higher than the other, and the other ones are in the back. But we cannot say that at any point in time where the envy is not just boiling somewhere a little bit, still on a low flame, it's kind of bubbling right there in our consciousness.
It's there all the time.
Okay? And it doesn't take much, right? Just a little bit, and then turn up the flame, and it starts to boil over. And then it becomes the predominant expression of our feelings. And suddenly it comes out. Anger, we're ready to charge, right? Who does he think he is? What do they think they're doing? What are they doing to me? You know, they don't know me yet, you know, but they will see who I am, right? I'm not to be messed around with. That's me, you know. You think you can step on me, right? So gradually, this mentality, it increases and increases, because even in that birth, where all these emotions are just bubbling there in the consciousness and coming out from time to time, still the dissatisfaction that has been with us from Anadi Bahir Mukha, from the very moment, from the onset that we came into the material world, that dissatisfaction has remained all the time. Can you imagine how hungry we are? We are becoming more and more hungry. It's like a fast that never ends. We're fasting from actual happiness so long since time immemorial. Therefore, the frustration is increasing and increasing and increasing. And the tendency is to go into the lower modes. Of course, one may be on the way benedicted by good association, and therefore develop some qualities of goodness, and temporarily one's lower qualities are placed in abeyance, and one may again rise up to heavenly planets, and one may again become situated in goodness. But again, that downward motion in the material world is always there, and the upward motion is never high enough. It is always falling short. Even if by some association you are temporarily uplifted from the lower consciousness of frustration and anger, still, even if you make it to higher places in the universe, you always go back down, because it's never enough. So, therefore, gradually the living entities develop this through and through envious nature, which begins to predominate their entire consciousness. And they hate the sight of everything, just out of spite, right? Just out of pure spite, they hate the sight of anything they see. Whatever I see, it stinks. Whatever I see, I can't stand it. Whatever it is, whatever I see, I got to destroy it, because it harasses me, right? This whole world is just a pain, right? And I'll make it feel that I'm sick and tired of it. And I'll just... So this demoniac mentality gradually develops and develops further and further, until a person becomes so envious that he cannot do anything but hate. And it is funny, because his material conditioning, right, according to the body that he has, begins to now express itself through this envy. Just like Putana. Putana was a lady, right? So, being a lady, what was her natural attraction? Babies. What else, you know? Somehow or other, women have this amazing capacity to become completely absorbed in these little creatures, right? Noisy, dirty, and so many things, and just go over it with awe and with ecstasy, right? Whereas every man looks at them from, how is it possible, you know? How is it possible that anyone could be attracted to that, you know? I mean, isn't it? Look at it, right? It's ugly. It looks like it's gonna die any moment. It's all red. It sometimes is all wrinkled, and it's got stains. It's bald, right? It's like, it's smelly, it's dirty, it's dribbling, it's drooling, it can't even speak, it's helpless, but it can cry. And that is the worst of all. It just cries and cries and cries. It's terrible. And then it makes some ridiculous sounds, like as if it's choking on something, and then all the women go, "Ah, look how cute." Right? So Putana also had that same tendency. Just look, she was naturally attracted to babies. But because she had gone down in the moats, and because she had become covered by envy, all her natural attraction for babies now became colored by this envy. And instead of loving babies in a motherly way, she loved babies to drink their blood. Baby blood. There is nothing tastier than that for Putana. Her special pastime was to drink the blood of many babies. And in this way, again, she killed another one of these little creatures that she hated them. She hated them. So in this spirit, not only did she have this terribly envious mentality, but somehow or other, along with it, she developed great power. And the intensity of her hate was very, very great, because, after all, it was fed by unlimited lifetimes of frustration. This envy was fed by all the unlimited lifetimes of frustration in material life, and therefore it was so intense, so strong, that it was practically, it was almost capable to overcome death. We're seeing. We're seeing that when a person is very, very envious and he's killed, right? If a very envious person is hounding you out of hate and he's killed, he still doesn't give up. He still keeps on coming, right? Maybe not in the body that he was in, but then in his subtle body, right? He'll never give up. He don't think he'll ever let go, because he'll hate you. His hate even continues beyond death. Right? He continues to hate. His hate is so strong that death will not wipe out his attachment to that hate. Nothing he will allow to take away this hate. And therefore he cannot continue. He cannot go on to a next body where he's supposed to start fresh. Okay. And take with him some of the emotions from this lifetime, but express them in a different way, not attached to the same situation and to the same people of the previous life. But one who is terribly attached to the situation of this life and to the people that he was having relationships with in this life, that person, he cannot go any further. And he will remain within his subtle body, and then he'll become an evil spirit that will express his anger and envy in that way. So, therefore it is said that a serpent, and especially when a serpent is being killed, you have to understand that when a snake is being killed, what the snake is going through at that moment, the snake is almost bursting of hate. The snake was already angry, right? Angry. You can see when you make a person who has an angry nature, and he's already a little walking around with a frown and with an angry face, you know, like don't speak to me kind of look, right? But if you do speak to him, especially in a harsh tone, then his anger is so extreme, right? His eyes turn red and he's ready to walk through a door, right? Like in the cartoons, you see the shape of the person in the door. That kind of mood. So a snake is the most envious creature, the most angry. He's already so angry on his own that he's not even waiting till they do something, right? If they dare to do something to me, I'll fix them, right? That's the mood of an envious, angry person. But a snake is so angry that even if they don't do anything to me, I'll fix them, right? I'll fix them just for crossing my path.
That's what I'll do. That's just ordinary consciousness. Yes. So you can imagine when you actually make him angry by surrounding him in the process of trying to kill a serpent. Generally, at least I saw in India, people become very excited. Stop, snake, snake, snake. And there's then a whole bunch of people and sticks around the snake, surround him, and the snake is just hissing and going completely wild. Anyway, then they beat the snake, break its back, and then it can't move so well anymore. Then they kill it. But it is said that the snake, his hate is so intense, that he just looks at the person who is killing him. And therefore, the look is so intense that within his eyes, the image of the person who has lifted the stick is just fixed. And then another serpent can come and read in his eyes. And he can read. He can actually read the image there. And then that serpent will find the person who did it and bite him and kill him. So therefore, everyone knows if you kill a snake, you have to burn it. That is the process. The process is to burn. And not only is it, we also understand from this purport that the intensity of envy of that living entity may be so strong that even although his body is hardly working anymore, even although it's practically destroyed and has therefore become inhabitable. After all, when the body becomes destroyed, the living entity cannot remain there. It remains very difficult to be. But if you're very, very determined, the will to live can even make a body that is destroyed still move. And if one is very determined to survive, like some people have the spirit of being survivors, right? And even when they are like almost dead, they're still kind of like, I'm going to survive, you know, I'm not going to die. And that will can actually pull them through. Whereas someone gives up the will to live, right, then he can just also leave the body because of that. Yeah. Not entirely, but if the body is then weak and not properly in a good condition, then when the will to live decreases, then one may leave. So in that way we can understand that a demoniac person or a serpent who is so envious and who is so driven by his desire of hate, that all his energy becomes bundled. Generally speaking, most of us are just mixed up. We have so many emotions. We have some hate. We have some love. We have some greed. We have some lust. We have all these different emotions. Therefore, we can't take any of them with complete dedication. We can't give all our energy to serving one particular emotion, because when we're doing that, then there's another one that comes in the to our attention, and we have to attend to that one. So in this way, most of us do not have this intensity. But a person who is envious is so overwhelmed by hate that it just becomes his only focus. And therefore, he can bundle tremendous concentration of energy in one particular act of hate. You'll see his intensity many times is much greater than anybody else, than any ordinary person, because all his energy becomes focused on that one thing, whereas everybody else's energy is all over the place. Bahusake inantascha, it's everywhere. But the envious person, his focus is in all this envy. So, therefore, we see with the tremendous intensity that the snake or the demoniac person may just one more time, the almost dead body, everyone had given it up, comes back to life just one more time, just when you're thinking it's dead, and just one final bite got you too, like that. So this is the mentality
of the demons and of the snake-like living entities. So therefore, we see that the demons seem to be very difficult opponents. They seem to have so much energy. They seem to be greater devotees of their demoniac activities than we are of our spiritual life. And we are here, you know, that is because we are not vyavasyatmika buddhi, because we are not fixed up completely. Although we have a desire to become free from the material world, our desire is mixed, right? Why are we devotees? On the one hand, we are devotees because material life is no fun, right? Because we somehow or other had the realization that material life is ultimately not that much fun. So therefore we thought, well, I guess, you know, I have to give it up. But we are not entirely convinced that we have to give it up. So we're divided. Therefore, spiritual life is a battle. It is a battle. It is a struggle. Vidvamsam api karsati balavan indriyan gramo, that the senses are so strong that even a person who's in knowledge, vidvamsam api karsati, even he struggles. Yes. Therefore, our determination is not that strong either, because we are divided. We're thinking on the one hand, well, I know I can't enjoy materially. I know it's not possible. But I would actually desire it. Yeah. I would still actually desire it, although I know better. But isn't it a shame? Isn't it a shame that you can't enjoy in this material world? And maybe, well, you can't enjoy completely to your full satisfaction, but you can enjoy a little bit to some level of satisfaction, and that in itself is not that bad either. Like that, we have some doubts, and these doubts, they make us a little weak in our determination. Therefore, we are not able to give the complete dedication that a demon may give. There are stories about Stalin, right? How he was so determined. He was so determined that he would have all kinds of operations and things without anesthesia, and it didn't do anything to him. He could handle that, right? They said he had dental work done without any anesthesia. Just, okay. So fixed, right? At one stage of his life, he had open heart surgery. No anesthesia. Completely conscious, right? Cut it open, right? Open heart surgery. Okay, stitch it up. You can imagine the intensity of this man. Fearsome, right? A fearsome personality. Right? This person, with his determination, sent millions to their death in the concentration camps. So we can understand what he was driven by. How his determination was fed by envy. And it showed what tremendous, tremendous determination the man had. Open heart surgery without anesthesia. Awesome, right? Awesome. Quite scary. So, determination is a quality that we may see in the materialists in sometimes a very, very strong way. And we are wondering ourselves. So our determination, our spiritual determination, we can build it up. It will be built up automatically by the process of cultivating knowledge of transcendence. That is all. Nastapriyesu abhadresu nicham bhagata sevaya. That simply the process of that we are following right now is very powerful and potent. It is so powerful and potent that just what we are doing right now is destroying all our doubts. Right? What we are going through right now, a lecture on the Srimad Bhagavatam, is so powerful that it can just eliminate our doubts and increase our determination.
Well, I don't feel anything, right? Somebody may say, especially with a Dutch conditioning, would have a tendency to go like, and Belgian and Dutch are the same like that, kind of really down to earth, you know, well, I don't feel anything, right? Not with me, you know. You can say that, but, you know, it's not working with me, right? Right? Not at all, you know. Right?
So we're in this country. But actually, it's not your Dutch conditioning that is playing you parts, right? Now it's just the American influence, you know. It's instant coffee, you know, instant everything, right? You want instant perfection. You want instant result. You want instant freedom of doubt right now. You know, here it is, you know. Open the can and boom, there it jumps out. Love of God and you'll be free, you know. Like, here it is, your holy name. Take it, chant it, Hare Krishna. It doesn't work, right? Doesn't work. Try a little longer, right? Try a little longer. Longer? Yes? How much longer, right? Oh, I don't know if I like this process of devotional service if it takes so long. You know, I'm looking for something quick, a quick fix, you know, not like a... You mean I have to work for it, etc.? Oh, whoa. It sounded pretty good, this process of yours. I mean, I believe in it, etc. But now you mean I have to have patience and work for it? I don't know about that. Right? Yes. So why is that? Is the holy name really so powerful? Is it really so powerful to sit here and to listen to the Srimad Bhagavatam that it's going to destroy all... Longer? Yes? How much longer? Right? Oh, I don't know if I like this process of devotional service if it takes so long. You know, I'm looking for something quick, a quick fix, you know, not like a... You mean I have to work for it, etc.? Oh, whoa. It sounded pretty good, this process of yours. I mean, I believe in it, etc., but now you mean I have to have patience and work for it? I don't know about that. Right? Yes. So why is that? Is the holy name really so powerful? Is it really so powerful to sit here and to listen to the Srimad Bhagavatam that it's going to destroy all our doubts and going to fix our determination to a point where it's so strong, much stronger than any demon's determination? Can it be? Is it possible? I don't believe it. No. It is possible. Then why did Krishna create it like this? Why does he let us sit here with all this doubt, right? That we have to go through this, that we are chanting and hearing the Bhagavatam and that we feel it doesn't work, right? Why do we have to go through this? Why does he put us through all this? Is that fair? Why is he doing it? Well, if Krishna would just give you the holy name or the Bhagavatam, and it would immediately transform you on the spot, right? If you'd say Hare Krishna, and immediately tears shooting from your eyes, and you start jumping in ecstasy around in the world, and forget everything, external consciousness, and just roll from one ecstasy into another, and everywhere, just waves of love, and anyone who touches you also becomes affected by it, and, you know, then anybody who touches that person immediately also gets it, and like this, the whole world expressed like that, right? If you see it in that way, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did it himself, well, that would be wonderful. But then, you know, where is the question of your independence? Right? Then it's practically Krishna who is kind of taking away our independence. He's just on the spot taking away our minute independence. So then we have that problem, okay? That Krishna is no longer giving us the choice. So that is why there is some time required. That is why there is some patience required for this process to work. And that is why this is this little illusory feature of the process of devotional service, where you think it doesn't work. It doesn't work. I'm doing it. I'm doing it all. I'm chanting. I'm listening to the Bhagavatam every morning, getting up, doing all these things. I'm doing everything. Done it for so long. I'm telling you, it doesn't work. I'm still the same as I've always was. Oh, you fell into the trap. It's just a little bit illusory feature in the whole process, right? Which is simply the independence. Krishna wants to see that you're surrendering your independence. And if you do surrender your independence, then he is also surrendering his independence. See, because if you become Krishna's devotee, it means that Krishna loses his independence. He's the supreme independent Lord who is not dependent on anybody, but if you surrender your independence to him, then he is bound to surrender his independence to you. He cannot avoid that. He must do it. He must reciprocate. He's bound. So therefore, if you're not, Krishna is also thinking, just as you're thinking, well, what about my independence, you know? I mean, I don't want to just lose my independence. Krishna also has some hesitation to lose his independence, right? Just like we do. Because everything that we have finds its origin in Krishna. So even that tendency of being a little concerned, of losing independence, is there in Krishna. And Krishna doesn't just want to lose his independence and become captured by us, right? Therefore, he wants to see that you are ready to give up that independence and that you're ready to just make that sacrifice for him and not, and give up that tendency of what am I going to get out of it? Right? What am I getting out of the deal? Right? What is in it for me? And if you give up this tendency of what is in it for me, and Krishna sees for a little while in time, right, that you are doing like that you're making the sacrifice, then he allows himself to be purchased. And he gives up his independence and he becomes like surrendered to you. He completely surrenders to you and he cannot ignore you. He becomes your dedicated servant, your personal servant. First, Krishna leaves you to the material energy, an automatic mechanism, and he himself, he continues with his eternal pastimes in the spiritual sky. But then, as you are giving up your independence, Krishna personally begins to attend to you. He becomes your servant. Carefully. He's always waiting there anyway, as the Paramatma, but then he begins to personally take charge of your life. And as you are giving up the independence more, then Krishna will still give up his independence more, and finally he'll become a dedicated devotee of you, as you're becoming a dedicated devotee of Krishna. This is the amazing quality of Krishna. Sadavo ridhya mayam sadanam ridhya tvaham mat anyat tena janati naham tebyo managapi. That Krishna is in the heart of his devotee and the dearmost object of his devotee, and that the devotee is in the heart of Krishna and dearmost to Krishna. So this is what will happen, and therefore we should not become intimidated by the demons. When we're looking at the determination of the demons, we should not become intimidated and think, oh, I don't have such determination. I don't have it. They have much more than me. Okay? We should understand how their envy is the result of frustration of many lifetimes. And we should understand how we ourselves are actually doing the right thing to get determination, to get much more determination than any demon. Because a demon's mind is always flickering. It is flickering because he cannot, it is chanchalam, because he is not finding peace anywhere. That you can only find at the lotus feet of Krishna. There's no shelter. Only Krishna is shelter where we can remain. He is asraya. He is shelter. So therefore, we should know that if we take this process, that we're doing the right thing. And that it is Maya. Maya who's simply seeing, oh, this devotee is slipping from my grip. Right? Now let me try and make him see that he's not making any advancement. Oh, just see how I'm capturing him this time. He's thinking I'm not making any advancement. Where he's making so much advancement, so quickly, so rapidly, so many lifetimes are being burned up every moment that he's in this movement, and he's getting so much purified, but he cannot see it. Because it takes just a little while before the effect will manifest in a very obvious and overwhelming strong way. And because he's impatient, he wants it immediately and then thinks it's not working. Yes. So Maya, in this way, is using this trick to drag us away from this process. So we should, with firm faith, continue and know that it is only a very short amount of time. Quicker than you think, suddenly the change will come if you take shelter of the process very strictly. So this is the secret. You must be very strict in following the process. You must take shelter of this sada achar. Sada achar is described as clean habits, Prabhupada says. Clean habits. You give up all the nasty, impure habits. Follow the clean process. Make your life very clean. And before you know it, suddenly you're finding, hey, I'm beginning to show symptoms of transcendental consciousness. What is this? What is happening? How is it possible? Me? Right? Yes, even you can also become changed by this movement to a spiritual platform. Even you, whoever you are, even whatever your level is, even you, anybody can be transformed by this movement, because the mercy is freely available to everyone, irregardless of your state. As we will hear tomorrow, even Putana got the mercy. Even she got the mercy, because she had at least some motherly attraction. She had attraction to babies, right? At least that much she had. And she expressed that attraction towards babies, directed it towards Krishna. And at least she gave him a nipple, although it was poisoned, right? Krishna just looked at the positive side of things. He saw the motherly side, and therefore Putana was given the eternal position as one of Krishna's mothers, since all these ladies of that generation in Vatsalya Rasa are considering themselves to be Krishna's mothers and are all sometimes get a chance. Just like when a mother has a baby, right, all the women are looking at it like kind of with envious looks, and they all want to have a chance, you know. And when the mother for a moment lets the kid go, then another one grabs it, puts it on the laps and starts mothering it, right, for a while. So in this way, it's also in the spiritual sky that Mother Yasoda is Krishna's mother, but the other mothers are always looking for a moment when they get a chance to pick up that child and just mother it, right? So this was given to Putana. In that way, everyone, even if you are of the lowest position, can become uplifted. Even Putana became uplifted. And we may be bad, but not that bad. I mean, so far we don't have any Putanas in the temple. So you may be pretty fallen, and you may think, I'll never succeed in this process. But, you know, you're still not as bad as Putana. Okay, so I haven't seen any Matajis like that yet. So, although it's a movement, maybe we are coming from the most degraded background, it's not that bad. So therefore, there is no reason why we could not become elevated as well. I'll end. Any questions or comments?
Extreme Prabhupada, you also can find some topics about purification of mind, purification of heart, purification of consciousness, also purification of ego. So could you maybe say something about those
aspects? Yeah. The purification takes place on all kinds of levels. So we have different spheres. We have the various ways that we are connected to Krishna's material energies. Bhumira Ponalo Vayu Kamana Buddha Cha Ahankaram Ityame Bina Prakriti Astada. These eight, right, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego, they are the energies that we have become entangled with. And we have allowed ourselves to become attached to these various energies that manifest itself in different forms. So we've become attached to a particular type of intelligence. Like you can see, we all have different types of intelligence. Some people have the intelligence to fix cars. Some people have the intelligence to fix computers. Some people have the intelligence to make wooden floors. And some people have the intelligence to make money. And some people, other types of intelligence. So you see, so many types of intelligence. So it's that you have to see, it's not that we have kind of developed that intelligence. Rather, that kind of intelligence was already there. We have just become attached to that kind of intelligence. Yes? So, particular bodies are already there, particular types of intelligence are already there, particular types of mind are already there. And basically, the living entity has become attached to all these different things, different types of mind, different type of intelligence, etc. And then according to his karma, he gets it with a certain power. Yeah? So we generally tend to think that this is developing from me. This mind is kind of is an extension from me. This intelligence is an extension. It's grown around me. But it's just the other way around. These things were already there, yeah? But we basically became attached to it. Yes? And therefore, we have to become purified from our attachment. So the purification is a purification of rerouting our attachment. And that is expressed in the verse 7.1 of Bhagavad Gita, Maya Shakta Manaparta Yoga Union Mat Asrayaha. So we must take shelter of Krishna, then our attachment will change. It will change towards Krishna. Then our intelligence becomes purified, and gradually our intelligence also shifts. And although we still have the particular intelligence that we became attached to by birth, and we may utilize that intelligence for Krishna, gradually it becomes purified and all Krishna-centered. And we will see that more and more we become absorbed in remembering Krishna and in dedicating everything to Krishna. It's not that you become completely detached then from your material condition. I'm not talking conditioning, but condition. Our material condition is that we are in a particular body now. Yeah, you cannot. And with a particular capacity. You cannot just change that. But still, by changing your attachment to Krishna, it may change to some extent. Yeah? And Krishna may lift you above your limitations. You may do things that you could have never done, would have never done. And in that way, we become detached from that particular conditioning in our surrendering to Krishna. So that is what it means, purify the consciousness, purify the mind, purify the body, purify the senses, and just in general, the purification takes place on all levels. Yes.
Can you explain more the difference between the spiritual intelligence and material intelligence?
Spiritual intelligence comes from Krishna, and material intelligence is mental speculation. That is the actual difference. So material intelligence means your own ideas, and spiritual intelligence comes from Krishna. Just like in one discussion with Prabhupada, Hari Sori mentions that Prabhupada was describing how some of the devotees had done something again which was a complete concoction, right? And Prabhupada said, shaking his head, he said, you're always coming up with these, you in general, right? Not to Hari Sori in particular, but you in general. You are always coming up with these nonsense ideas, okay? Somehow or other, you're always coming up with these nonsense ideas. And then Hari Sori said, well, how can we avoid coming up with nonsense ideas? And Prabhupada said, by taking the ideas from your spiritual master. That's the way. You take the ideas from your spiritual master. So it is mentioned in the Shastra, Dharmam tu saksat bhagavat pranitam, that actual religious principles or the absolute truth comes directly from Krishna. It comes directly from Krishna. So, instructions about our real occupation, our true occupation, which is another way to translate Dharma, are coming directly from Krishna. Therefore, spiritual intelligence comes from Krishna. Tadami buddhiyogam tam. And one must take shelter of it. So initially, we take shelter of it externally by taking shelter of the books and lending our ear to the transcendental discussions. And then gradually, we see that it also begins to manifest from within. Right? Still, even before, there may be some piety, and Krishna may manifest a little bit of spiritual intelligence in you, which is that little bit which will bring you, which will make you inquire. So even before you meet the devotees, you can at least, by the grace of Krishna, get a little bit of spiritual intelligence where you inquire. Atato brahmi yigyasa. But then, to go further with spiritual life, it said you need a special sukriti, which is related to bhakti. You need to get the connection with a devotee, and that devotee will give you spiritual intelligence. Then you can actually continue to act upon the spiritual path. So in yourself, you can develop a desire for spiritual advancement, a spiritual intelligence, but real spiritual intelligence you get from the devotee. It is called bhakti unmukha sukriti, and that you will only get from a devotee. There is also bhogonmukhi sukriti and mokshonmukhi sukriti, or just benefits that you'll get for a better position in the material world or for liberation, but that's all material. So that's not, that's material, or at least not eternal. So spiritual intelligence always comes from Krishna and his devotee.
Maharaj, there's a statement that a Vaishnava takes pleasure when an envious living entity like a serpent or a scorpion is killed, but there are also some incidents that a Vaishnava takes compassion, like Narada Muni, who started preaching to this cobra, Adhyas Thakur, living in a cage with a snake.
Okay. Sadeta Modur Vichika Sarpahatya was a verse which is quoted by Prahlad Maharaj when Hiranyakasipu was killed. We also know the story that once Srila Bhakti Siddhanta killed a serpent in his ashram, and Prabhupada was wondering about it, and then later read this verse and felt very relieved because he had some little doubt about his spiritual master and felt uncomfortable with that, and that was relieved by this verse. Prabhupada also quoted the verse when Mr. Nair, who obstructed him so much in the development of the Bombay project, he quoted this same verse when Nair died. So, in a sense, it is true that the sadhus, they take pleasure not only in the killing of an envious snake, but also of a, or when a demon dies who is a great obstruction in our process. Not that we are making arrangements ourselves to kill demons, not at all. But if Krishna makes the arrangement, then we see that as a special mercy of Krishna. If some great demon in the world, I'm talking about a great one, is removed. Just like when Adolf Hitler was somehow or other removed from the earth, it was a relief to people. So, therefore, in that way, not that we are proposed that we are going to look at people and going to say, well, this one must be a demon. Oh, right, we're waiting for him to drop dead or something. People might read that into what I'm saying. That's why I'm making this statement very clearly, that it goes for a particular demon. But on the other hand, nobody is a demon by nature. The position of demon is always a temporary position. Okay? So therefore, no one is really a demon. Actually, everyone is really a devotee. So therefore, we are not so generally not looking, identifying people with as demons, right? We're just seeing, okay, they right now have a demon conditioning, and accordingly we deal with them, just as we're looking at a tiger and say he has a tiger conditioning, be a little careful. But the demon also, we must be careful. But a devotee is still looking at ways to get this demon to advance. However, a snake, when a snake is killed, okay, he is actually being purified. Yes. So in the next birth, the snake has a chance to begin with a little less envy. A little less, right? It's not that it's all gone just like that, but a little less. So in that way, it is, so the saintly person is seeing like that, that this living being, this living entity had become so conditioned by this horrible demoniac mentality, it's going to take a while for him to become purified. It may have to be spread out over many lifetimes, so therefore, okay, he's killed. In the next life, at least, he can have a better chance to continue and stop making offenses. Because the problem with an envious person and a demon is not only that he is envious of the ordinary persons, but he is directly envious of the Supreme Lord and of the devotees, and therefore he tends to look for the opportunity to make offenses. He tends to, he's attracted to go look for the devotees and to make some offenses out of his envy. So this is highly highly inauspicious for him, right? Because he's actually causing himself with that some real serious damage, right? Some real heavy karma and heavy lifetimes ahead. So in some cases it is better for the person himself if he's relieved from his envious mentality by death. Which is only a change of bodies anyway. Yes?
I was wondering if there is any way to use enviousness or hating someone in devotional service. Because, you know, we sometimes get these tricky questions. If you say that you can use everything in service, yes, of Krishna, how you can use drugs or atomic, yeah, bomb or this and that.
But envy, of course, is the exception. Because envy means jiva himsa. It means that envy means that we are causing harm to other living entities. Envy means that what separates us from Krishna, because ultimately we want to be Purusha. Envy means you want to be Purusha, you want to be the enjoyer, and that you cannot be. Krishna is the enjoyer. So therefore, no, envy has to be given up. Symptoms related to envy can sometimes be engaged, like anger can be engaged, although anger is obviously very much manifest in envious people. Such a quality can be engaged in Krishna's service. Hanuman's anger is the example, right? Burning Lanka, that was all right. So that can be. Bhima's anger, right? So anger can be employed, but envy, no. Duryodhana had to be removed. There was no way around it. The war was inevitable. Yeah. It had to be done. This envy cannot remain. Yes, Mahabhu.
Short question. We heard that the son of Parikshit Maharaj, when he knew that his father was killed by a serpent, he decided to kill all the serpents. So he started and he was being successful.
Yes.
And then you see that the Brahma became disturbed.
Right.
All the serpents were being killed by the son of Parikshit Maharaj, and then he preached to him that he should spare the serpent.
Yeah.
So what's the reason that such an elevated soul is concerned about the well-being of the envious creation?
Yes. Well, because there is an arrangement of 8,400,000 species for the living entities to express their different state of conditioning. Okay? And there is just a need for these envious bodies, because living entities do develop this frustration and with that hate for others who seem to be enjoying and they are not. Right? So the envy just begins to build up in them, and therefore they need to have some species where they can express it. So Janamejaya, the son of Maharaj Pariksit, was naturally inclined to do so, and it wasn't born out of impiety. He was a pious person. He was just seeing these serpents are envious creatures and let me get rid of them. But he was overlooking the greater picture, and the picture that there are such living entities and that there is a particular order in the universe, and that within that order the snake bodies, the spider bodies, and the scorpion bodies, and the Rurus and Rauravas down at lower planets who are even more envious, that they're required for some living entities to, for a while, experience what it's like to be envied, because they want it. And within the scheme of giving independence to the living entity, Krishna will not deny everyone the chance to even be that also, if that's what they want. But he restricts it because of the disturbance that it causes to others. But in a funny way, we are in a world, right, where everything is based on envy, and therefore jivo jivasya jivanam, one living entity is food for another, which is something compared to the ocean of worms that chew on each other. Basically, that's where we are. So it's envious to start off with.
Is there also some consideration that there are different types of serpents and snakes, like
all are
envious and demoniac, but there's also like serpents which are different.
He's also a serpent. Of course, that is a transcendental serpent, and he was definitely not going to fall in the fire of Janamejaya. Even there was no worry for that. Now, it is not a high birth. The serpent bodies, they are not. Although they have different levels of sophistication, there are nagas. Now, there may be some exceptions amongst the Nagas who by some arrangements became purified. Kaliya is still there at Fiji, right, in the ocean as a great devotee these days. So there may be some exceptions here and there, but mostly the serpents are not pure. Okay? They have envy, but some are more sophisticated than others. Some have planets where they are residing in quite civilized surroundings, etc., which are materially more opulent and sophisticated than ours. Right? So, but I have limited knowledge of that because my knowledge only comes from the Srimad Bhagavatam on these matters, and that is not so broad. It doesn't go in so much detail. It's not like I didn't read the Naga Samhita or something like that. I'm not sure if there is one, but the Naga Shastra, you know, whatever it may be, and read all the details about the snakes. So here I have to stop. My knowledge ends, and time also. The snake of time will capture us if we're not watching out, the Kala Sarpa. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.